Okay, thank you everyone for coming out on a snowy night. I know it's not easy. Bergenfield has to really work on the plowing situation. I think that's one thing we all agree on. That's for sure. Rav Avram Palm was once asked to speak at a major Agudah convention about chinuch. And Rav Palm got up, and Rav Palm was, you know, certainly one of the most respected gedolim in that time period, a person of great understanding of human personality, a person who was considered a genius, one of the geniuses of the generation when it comes to matters of chinuch. And he said, I'm sure you're all expecting me to get up and tell you Das Torah, to tell you what the Torah says about chinuch. Rav Palm says, I'm only here to tell you Das Rav Palm. I can only tell you what Rav Palm thinks about chinuch. I can't tell you. There are no absolutes in these matters. Now, I'm sure no one here came tonight thinking that this is going to be Das Torah. Right? But this is Das Moshe Tzvi Weinberg on matters of chinuch. There's a lot of different. You know, I've been a parent for 8 years. I've been an educator for 10 years. There's a lot of things you learn along the way. And there's no one right answer. And I'm not going to pretend. I'll certainly not pretend that I have all the answers. But, you know, you try to learn something along the way. Again, as parents, I think everyone in the room is blessed with children, different ages, different stages, but, you know, the goal is to try to learn and to share experiences. And again, as a teacher, Chazal tell us that our students are considered like our children. So, Baruch Hashem, I'm blessed with hundreds of children. Over my 10 years, I have hundreds of children. I have very different types of children. I have children who are madly in love with God. I have children who are madly in love with their non-Jewish girlfriends. So, you know, we have to learn to educate different children in different ways. So, I want to just present to you a few thoughts, the Das Moshe Tzvi, certainly not Das Torah, on a matter that we really need to think about. You know, every generation has its mitzvah. There's an idea that Noam Elimelech, the Rebbe Elimelech of Lizhensk, the great Hasidic master, wrote in Parshas Noach that every generation has its mitzvah. And he said, the tzaddik that he was able to identify with his great Torah knowledge, the mitzvah of his generation. The mitzvah, he said, of his generation was the mitzvah of tzitzis. Okay? People were very into tzitzis in that time. People were not into tzitzis in that time. He wanted to get people into tzitzis during that time. It's amazing. There's actually a story. One of the big discussions in halacha, if you look into the halachos of tzitzis from that time period and shortly thereafter, was the discussion whether or not you can make tzitzis with machines, or do they have to be handmade. And many of the Gedolei HaPoskim ruled that machine-made tzitzis is really not appropriate. And there's an amazing tshuva from the Divrei Chaim, the Samza Rebbe, Shalos Tshuvas Divrei Chaim, where he speaks out very strongly against people who use machines. There was a person who wanted to open a big factory, he thought he could make a lot of money. The Divrei Chaim said, it's not the way, we shouldn't do it. And if you look at the newer prints, in a footnote, it says, a postscript, what happened? It says this fellow didn't listen to the Gedolim of the generation. He built his machine to his factory, and it says, you know, the whole thing burned down. There's a terrible fire in the factory, and he lost his entire business. So, okay, you have tzaddikim who can identify what the mitzvah of the generation is. Those tzaddikim identify that tzitzis was the mitzvah of their generation. So what is the mitzvah of our generation? Every person has their own special mitzvah. I think we know which person was into tzitzis in our generation. If you ever saw Rav Scheinberg, you know who was into tzitzis. Every person has their avoda, their mitzvah. Every generation, every door has its mitzvah. So what is the mitzvah of our generation? So there's a beautiful little sefer. Maybe we should learn it together. I don't know. Maybe we should have a more regular learning group and talk about things that have to do with chinuch. But there's a beautiful sefer by the Slonim Rebbe, the author of the Nesivos Shalom. He wrote a little volume called the Nesivei Chinuch, Pathways of Chinuch. And he writes in the beginning, he says, how are you supposed to know what the mitzvah of the generation is? How do you know if you had a great tzaddik you can go to reveal it to you, like Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk? Okay, but where do we turn nowadays? So he writes, I want to just read you two lines. He says, it's brought, B'shem Tzaddikei Emes, in the names of righteous leaders, how do you figure out what the mitzvah of the generation is? What are some of the signs? What are the keys to figure it out? A mitzvah that a person sees a certain help, a certain illumination from on high. And a person sees that if I work at this, God will help me to be successful in this. And we see that the people who put in the real efforts and think about it and talk about it and work on it are able to see tremendous success. Something that people are working on and struggling with but being successful in, through great efforts, that's a sign that that's the mitzvah of the generation. Says the Slonim Rebbe, I would like to suggest, says the Slonim Rebbe, we should learn that today, yesh lanu lilmod odas hachinach ha-torati, teaching Torah values, that is pisgat ha-shlichus shel dorim. That's what our generation is about. To try to educate our children, both in, again, in a formal educational setting and in our homes. That we should be able to create an environment for our children, that's the mitzvah of the generation. And it's a very challenging mitzvah. Again, he's not trying to pull the wool over our eyes and say it's going to be very easy because this is the mitzvah of the generation, so it's going to go smoothly. It's a struggle. It takes tremendous effort. It's a major, major undertaking to be successful in chinuch. And for something that's so delicate and so sensitive, what are the prerequisites? Say a person becomes a parent. Like if you want to teach, okay, you're supposed to have maybe a degree or two. I happen to have beaten the system a little bit in that regard. Never really went to graduate school. But, right, no, you know, in normal circles, a person wants to get a job, there are prerequisites, there are requirements. Right? What does it take to become a parent? You get a certificate that you're a fitting parent, you have a clue what you're doing to educate a child. Right? There's no prerequisite, there's no certificate. You know, imagine, a person walks into an operating room. Right? You walk in, there's some neurosurgeons performing a very delicate procedure. You walk in, you say, you know, I'd like to give it a try. So, what are your credentials? Who are you? You know, we've never met you. Are you one of the great doctors from overseas who's come to visit our hospital to help us with this delicate procedure? No, I'm just a guy off the street. I want to give it a shot. So we'd say to such a person, you're crazy, get out of here. You don't have the skills, you don't have the tools, you don't have the sensitivities, you don't have the delicate hand motions that are required for such a procedure. And yet, what's chinuch? It's the exact same thing. But Rishon Salanter said, educating a child is like holding a bird in your hand. If you squeeze too tightly, you'll kill the bird. If you open up the hands too much, the bird will fly away. It's this very delicate balance of having high hopes for one's child and creating standards of what's acceptable for one's child and at the same time not squishing the child. It's a very delicate procedure. And yet you don't have to go through years and years of training. And that's why it's so important that we get together and you talk about these things and share ideas and work together to try to come up with a system, a plan of how we can be better parents and better, you know, better educators, again in formal and informal settings. If you think about what it means to have a Jewish child in our home, right, how do we look at our children? How do we look at our children? So I guess it depends on the day. It depends on the age of your children. Right, boys, girls, we're blessed with 3 girls behind her. And I've been told that girls are easier than boys. I don't know. I'm one of 3 boys growing up. We were pretty chilled out though, so we were easy on my parents. Right, but you know, how do you look at your children? What do I see when I see a child? So again, it depends. Maybe it depends how many diapers I change that day, how many cups of milk or orange juice spilled, right, how hard I work to prepare dinner only to have a child say, I want something else, or how much the child refuses to do his or her homework. There's a lot of things that can get us into, you know, a certain mindset when we're looking at our children, where we're kind of going through the motions. We want to just deal with what we need to deal with, get them fed, get them bathed, get them to sleep, and go on with their lives. But it's interesting. If you look in the Torah, there are 2 places that we encounter the concept of kruvim. What are kruvim? Where do we find the kruvim in the Torah? So the one that we all think of course, is in the context of the Mishkan. On top of the Arun, there were 2 kruvim. Where else do we have kruvim? Anyone think of it? In Bereishis, at the beginning of the Torah. At the beginning of the Torah, Adam gets kicked out of the garden, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, in order to guard the garden, he places a cherem, a revolving sword, whatever that is, and he places kruvim. Hashem puts kruvim at the entrance to Gan Eden. How does Rashi translate kruvim? So in Gan Eden, Rashi translates kruvim as malachei chavala, destructive angelic forces. How does Rashi translate kruvim by the Mishkan? The kruvim are these sweet angelic beings with the faces of children, right? So Moshe Mordechai Epstein says, so which is it? Is a kruv a terrorist? Is it some evil malach that's looking to destroy you? Or is a kruv a sweet child with an angelic glowing face, right, only looking to make your life wonderful and more wholesome? And the answer is, you know, exactly. It's a little bit of both. How do we look at our children? Do we see our children as again, they're angels, they're mamash angels, and a shama that was sent from on high and trusted to each and every one of us? Right, but how do we look at them? Do we see them as someone who's trying to make my life difficult? Do I see a child as an angel, right, with a shining countenance, with so much potential? How do we see our children? The choice is ours. They're both called kruvim. A kruv can be one or the other. The goal is to try to see our children in a positive fashion. And it can be hard. It can be tiring. I don't have to tell anyone here. Everyone understands what it's like. But at the same time, we have to believe in our children. We have to see them in a positive light. We have to be able to look at them and say that I see greatness before my eyes. Not for my own benefit. I look at who you are. I see your potential. Someone once came to Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, one of the great Rabbanim of Yerushalayim. I said to Rav Zonnenfeld, we're opening a school, and we want a letter of recommendation, of approval for our school. So Rav Zonnenfeld said to this educator, he said, I'm happy to write you a letter. Happy to encourage your new project to create this school. I have one simple question. Do you believe as an educator that Mashiach can come from your school? Is Mashiach sitting in one of your classrooms? As principal said, it's like a lot to, it's a lot to ask. He said, well, do you think, you set up a system, you have a plan, what your day is going to look like. Do you think you're creating a system? Are you educating in such a way that Mashiach could be amongst your students? And this principal, this educator, didn't have the confidence to say so. So Zonnenfeld says, then I can't write you a letter of recommendation. A teacher who doesn't believe, a person who's educating, a person who's looking at a Jewish child. Again, a Jewish child could be a baby through a young adult, a teenager, and beyond. Right? To be able to look at a child and to not see a potential for Mashiach, to not see the greatness of that child, Chas v'shalom, a person doesn't understand what we have to understand what we're dealing with before we even talk about how to educate our children. We have to understand what we're looking at when we're looking at a Jewish child. There's a very strange halacha in Yoredeya. The halacha is that if a child is of nursing age, so the halacha is if the child can be nursed by a Jewish woman, you shouldn't allow the child to nurse by a non-Jewish person, by a non-Jewish woman. The assumption is that, again, that the milk that's being produced by this non-Jewish woman is being produced by non-kosher foods, and therefore it's better, again, it's not usur, but it's better if you have the possibility to nurse a Jewish child from a Jewish woman, that is recommended by the Shulchan Aruch. What's the source for this halacha? Where do we learn this idea from? That it's better to nurse a Jewish child from a Jewish woman? So if you look at the Vilna Gaon's commentary at the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch, where he gives you some of the sources, he says, you know what the source is? The source is Moshe Rabbeinu. You remember the story, Moshe Rabbeinu, they take him out, they're trying to find someone to nurse him, no one wants to nurse him, okay, finally he comes back to his own mother, and he nurses from his own mother. This is the source that it's ideal for a Jewish child to nurse from a Jewish woman. So says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and his emes Yaakov, hold on one second. Why did Moshe refuse to nurse from the Mitzri, right, from the Mitzris, from this non-Jewish woman? Why did he refuse all the nurses? Why was that so? So Rashi tells us why. Because he was destined one day, the same lips that would speak, peh al peh, upon him, upon him, would have direct communication with the Shekhinah. It was totally inappropriate for someone who can have that level of communication with God that such a child should nurse from a non-Jewish woman. So says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, so why is this brought in Yoredeya chapter 82 as halacha for the Jewish people? Why is this recorded? Why is it on the books as something that every Jewish child is supposed to live with? Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the answer is very obvious. Because again, we have to believe that our children will speak one day, face to face, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu did. That our children have the potential to be great Jewish leaders, to shape Klal Yisrael in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu did. And again, it means a lot of different things. It's not one thing. It's not that you have to be the wisdom of Moshe Rabbeinu, to be an outspoken leader like Moshe Rabbeinu, but to believe that our children will have a face-to-face, a pal-pal encounter with the Divine. If we don't believe that, if we don't raise them from the youngest of age, if we're going to compromise at a young age the quality of their upbringing, right? So then God forbid, we squash all that potential. It's a major, major achrayus. And again, we didn't sign up. We never took a course in this. That's why it's important to talk about it. But to believe in our children, to be our biggest fans of our children. There's so many things in the world today. There's so many people in the world today who are going to tell our children they can't and they won't. Right? And they're not capable. There's so many people out there. There's so many encounters in life where their self-esteem is going to be crushed by people who say you're not good enough. We have to be our children. We have to be the biggest fans of our children. Shlomo Karlbach was one time walking with one of his daughters. And as she was walking, she turns to her father, she picks up a leaf, and she says, Daddy, eat this leaf. Did I tell this story once? Daddy, eat this leaf. Okay. So he took the leaf and he put it in his mouth. He started chomping on the leaf. He was walking with one of his friends, or Shlomo was walking with one of his disciples, one of his friends. So Yitzchak Buxbaum was walking with him, turned to Rav Shlomo and said, you know, Rav Shlomo, like, it's a little extreme. Your child picks up a leaf off the ground and says, "Eat, Daddy, eat this leaf," and you put it in your mouth. And Rav Shlomo said, "Do you know how many times in life my daughter is going to be told, your ideas are crazy, your ideas don't make sense? You know how many times in life a person's going to hear that over the course of their life? People are going to say, your ideas are not going to make it. Your plans are not realistic. Right? I have to teach my child that the things that go through her mind, her dreams, her ideas, as crazy as they may be, they can become reality. Daddy, eat this leaf." And he ate the leaf. Again, if we can't be the biggest fans of our own children, then we've made a terrible, terrible mistake. And again, it doesn't mean to pressure our children. I want to be very clear about that. Right? When we talk about the greatness of a Jewish child, and we see all that potential, we sometimes become frustrated because we want to actualize that potential. So we start to put pressure on our children that they, you know, why aren't you? I heard all these ideas, like, you're such an unbelievable, you know, you're a malach, you have so much potential, you're going to speak one day face to face with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, so why are you being so difficult? Why are you giving me so much trouble? And why am I not seeing that potential become a reality? And therefore we start to sometimes put pressure on our children. And we want to see results. Right? We want to see. We know what you could do. We know how God created you. So let's see some results. That's a big mistake. It's a big mistake when people pressure their children to try to be a certain way. One of the biggest mistakes you can make in chinuch is pushing a child at the wrong age to have a certain expectation. And maybe you're comparing it to one of your other children who maybe showed certain signs at a certain age, or you're comparing it to someone else's child. Maybe you're comparing it to yourself as a child. There's a million different comparisons we can make, and they're all destructive and they're all harmful. To be able to look at the child and to say, what's best for this child? Not what's best for me. It's rule number one in chinuch. Chanuch l'nar pi darko. Educate a child according to his or her abilities and needs. What works for this child? Not what works for me. And again, to be great, to use one's potential to achieve greatness can mean a lot of different things. I want to share with you a line from the Vilna Gaon. You know, different people are born with different capabilities, a different nature, a different teva. Sometimes you have a child. Again, a kruv could be a sweet child, a malach, or it could be a destructive malach. But it's all about channeling that energy in the right way. The Vilna Gaon writes the following. Af misha tiv ora. Sometimes you have a person whose teva, whose natural ability, whose natural midos are just a little bit off. Why is that? That's how they're born. Some people are very gentle, some people have a temper. Some people are very haughty, some people are very gentle in the way they present themselves. There's a lots of different midos. Some are tov, some are ra. But a person is born with a certain teva. Listen to what the Vilna Gaon says. And it's a little bit counterintuitive. Lo yelech neged hateva legamri. As much as we want to rid ourselves of bad midos, you can't fight who you are. I mean, if you look at a child, a certain child has a certain drive, a certain energy, a certain way of expressing himself or herself. It says in the Gaon, don't fight against your nature. So what am I supposed to do? Just accept the fact that my child's a brat and just live with it? What does that mean? Ki lo yiskayim biyadam. Because if you try to fight who you are, it's not going to work. You can try to control a child and force them down a certain path. If it's not their path, it's not going to work. A person has to learn to walk a proper path according to their nature. So what does that mean? The mashal. Misha nolad b'mazal ma'adim. A person who's born under the mazal ma'adim. What does that mean? The Gemara describes a person who's born under the mazal ma'adim is going to be a bloodthirsty person. So that sounds dangerous. That sounds destructive. How do I learn to channel that in the right way? So the Gemara says, the Vilna Gaon quotes it here, "Shumuchrach lios shofeir dam." It's his very nature to spill blood. That's a part of who he is. As yesh biyadul ischanech lios shochei shubeinoni. How can I channel that? If I want to walk a middle path, a beinoni path, become a shochei. It's a good profession. It's a noble thing. If you want to be a tzaddik, become a malach. I become a doctor, a surgeon, help people in that way. Belolios listim, don't be a murderer, don't be a robber who beats people up and spills their blood. Says the Vilna Gaon, that's what chanoch l'nar al pi darko means. V'zesh kosu, chanoch l'nar al pi darko, gam ki azkin lo yasur mimena. Recognize that child's way. Again, they're all great. Every child's great. Every Jewish child is great. But great means a lot of different things. For some, great means becoming great in the study of Torah. Some people have great ability to do chesed. Some have great ability to be involved in political matters to help the Jewish community at large. There's a lot of ways that a person can be great. and if we create this vision for our child, we want it to be great in a particular way, God forbid it can become very stifling. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Right? Rav Moshe Feinstein's children, we recognize their greatness. They all became great. And many of them became great in the way that their father was great. Well, Rav Moshe Feinstein was a great Talmid Chacham, and his children are great Talmidei Chachamim. But I once read in the Sefer that Rav Moshe was once sitting with his children, one of his sons, at a young age, they were sitting and learning together. Happens to be right outside the window, there were a bunch of kids playing in the courtyard, playing ball. And his son was looking out the window a little bit. And Rav Moshe closed the Sefer, and he said, "You know what, I want you to go play with your friends." Right? Now again, he went on to become a great Rosh Yeshiva, which means he had the potential at that age already to be someone who's involved in learning more so than his friends who didn't become great Rosh Yeshiva. And yet Rav Moshe said, now's not the time. Now's not the time to push. It has to be in a way, chanuch na al pi darko, what's right for my child. Again, I believe in your greatness. I'm not compromising your greatness. But I'm not going to ram it down your throat. I'm not going to make demands of you that you should become great so that I should feel good. That I should get a nachas ruach. That I should be able to be so proud that my child is X, Y, or Z. That it achieves a particular vision that maybe we had for our child. Children have to realize that the love is unconditional. The greatness can come, it will come in different ways. But it can't be that the worst thing in the world, in chinuch or in kiruv, is to try to make a project out of someone else. To make another human being into your project. Right? That I have a dream, that I want my child to be a certain way, so that I, as the parent, will be able to walk around to a friend and say, "That kid, that awesome child, right? Oh, that boy, that girl, that's my child." And there's a part of us, of course, we want to have nachas from our children. But it can't be that a child feels that my parents like working on me like a project. That it's not about me, it's about my parents. That's a very destructive thing. You know, one of the reasons we don't make a bracha when we give tzedakah is this very reason. Right? Tzedakah is a big mitzvah. Why don't we make a bracha when we give tzedakah? Because imagine how the ani is going to feel. He's standing there, he says, and I stand there on the street corner, he says, can you spare a dollar? Hey brother, you have a dollar for me. So you reach into your wallet or your purse, you take out a dollar, and you say, "Hold on, just one second. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam." Right? You know, that makes the person feel like an object. They're no different than the little tzedakah box in the shul. Right? So we don't want to make our children into an object. We don't want to make them into a tool or a prop for us to parade around and say, "Look how my little, you know, tzaddik or tzaddikus acts." A child needs to know that the love is unconditional. I read an amazing sefer this week. I have a lot of Jewish books. I read an amazing sefer this week. Tell me if you've heard of this sefer. The sefer is called, I read it as a board book. The sefer is called The Runaway Bunny. You know the story of The Runaway Bunny? I didn't grow up reading The Runaway Bunny. I grew up reading Goodnight Moon. I called my mom. I said, did you read me The Runaway Bunny when we were kids? So she's like, "No, we didn't do that. We did other books. Goodnight Moon, Giving Tree." So some of the classics. Some of the Dr. Seuss classics. Just this week for the first time. We had the book in the house for a while. I was sitting, I was putting the ear to sleep, our two-year-old, and she grabbed The Runaway Bunny off the shelf. So I had like made up the story a few times in the dark, because we were reading like by her nightlight, but for the first time I read it in the light, I actually read the story, instead of Daddy's, you know, crazy version of it. I read the story. What an amazing story. What's the story? What's the mice of The Runaway Bunny? It's a beautiful sefer. What's the story of The Runaway Bunny? The story of The Runaway Bunny is that the bunny turns to his mother and says, "Mom, I'm out of here. I don't want to be a bunny anymore." So the mother says, "Well, if you run away, I'm going to chase after you." So the runaway bunny says, "Well, if you're going to chase after me, so I'm going to turn into a fish." So the mother says, "Well, if you're going to turn into a fish, I'll be a fisherman, and I'm going to catch you and bring you back." So the bunny says, "Well, then I'm going to climb up to a mountain and become a rock." So the mother says, "I'm going to become a mountain climber, and I'll climb up, and I'm going to bring you back. And whatever you're going to become, I'm prepared, ba'asher husham, like it says in the Chumash, I'm going to join you in that place, whatever it is, wherever you're holding. Sometimes it's moments that I'm very proud of. Sometimes it's a child going through a struggle. But I can promise you, my child, I'm going to be with you unconditionally. I don't have to love what they're doing. Right? Some of my students, again, my children who are my students. Right? So I don't love a lot of the things that some of them do. But they know at the end of the day that they have, you know, an additional parent who loves them, who cares about them, who they can trust. One of the greatest phone calls I think I ever got was 1:30 in the morning from one of my students saying, "Rebbe, you know, like, I'm in a bad place. I'm not happy with what's going on, and I need to talk to you." And I said, "Do you know how happy I am to know that you can call me at 1:30 in the morning?" Right? Meaning, I would hope that if I was ever really in trouble, I needed my parents to bail me out at 1:30 in the morning, I would call. Right? But that's because, and again, that wasn't proud, and he knew I wasn't proud of where he was or what he was doing, but he knew that he had someone he could trust. The love was unconditional. So the bunny goes and he runs and here and there. And the mother says, "I'll become that. I'll join you." It's the Gemara in Maseches Megillah that says when the Jewish people went into Golas Bavel, We went into Galus Babel, the Shekhinah says, I'm coming with you. We went into Yavan, the Shekhinah says, I'm coming with you. Hashem says, I'll join you wherever you are. The Jew has to realize that we're walking around with a piece of God inside of us. It's built into us. That means if we go to a place where a Jew doesn't belong, God says, I'm coming along for the ride. That chelek elo kamimah, that piece of neshama inside us, comes along for the ride. And it goes to that place, and it goes to this place. So what's the end of the Maisa? At the end of the story, the runaway bunny, right, finally realizes that it can't get away from its mother. It says, I'm going to become a boy, I'm going to run into a house. I'm going to be your mother, I'm going to wait for you there with open arms. So the bunny says, shucks, that's the lashon of the sefer, shucks, I might as well just be a bunny. The mother says, yeah, you might as well just be a bunny. And she gives him a carrot tea. A child needs to know that I'm prepared to do it. Not my project. I'm not trying to manipulate you so that I can have nachas. I have expectations for you. I have high hopes for you. I have dreams for you. I want you to believe in yourself, and I want you to know that I believe in you. And I want you to strive for greatness. But greatness means a lot of things, and life is a long ride. And I'm prepared to shower you with unconditional... Again, I don't have to love everything my child does. But that the child should know at the end of the day that the parent loves the child. I'll engage you wherever you are, by Asher Husham. That's a major, major yisod, I think, that we all know. But again, it's important to review when it comes to educating our children. The Pasuk says in Iyov, Adam la'amal yulad. A person was created to work. Now again, we get into this profession of being parents without signing up for it, without taking any course or passing any examinations. Adam la'amal yulad. A person is created to work. And something that comes to us that we didn't really necessarily be not necessarily prepared for, we don't necessarily have the tools how to handle it. You would hope that God would make it easy for us. But that's not the reality of life on planet Earth for a Jew. Eo says, Adam la'amal yulad. Man was created to work. And that's true both in Ruchnias and in Gashmias. It's true in the spiritual realm, and it's true in the physical realm. And I was thinking just tonight, Adam la'amal yulad, think about it. Adam la'amal, when does a person get to work? Yulad. Right? Yulad, when a child is born. When a child is born, then a person has to really get to work. Chinuch is not something that a person can do in a passive fashion. Rav Volbi writes in his beautiful Kuntres, again, another sefer that maybe we should sit and learn Keseder to study it inside. Rav Shlomo Volbi, the great Mashkiach, writes in the beginning of his sefer on Chinuch. He says, Chinuch cannot be performed passively. You can't be passive with your children. It can't be that on the side, here and there, I'm going to impart messages of Jewish values to my child. It has to be something that I'm proactive with. It's not a devoda that you can do casually. It's something that requires Mesiras Nefesh. Each of the Avos lives a life of Mesiras Nefesh. So the Belzer Rebbe says, so let's look at the life of the Avos. What was Avos Mesiras Nefesh? He jumped into a fiery furnace. What was Yitzchak's Mesiras Nefesh? He was bound at the Akedah, nearly sacrificed, right, by his own father. What was Yaakov's Mesiras Nefesh? Where was the moment that Yaakov almost gave his life, right, on behalf of God? Avram went into a fiery furnace. Yitzchak was nearly slaughtered. He was prepared to die on a mizbeach. Where was Yaakov's Mesiras Nefesh? The Belzer Rebbe of Yisachar Dov of Belz said, you know what his Mesiras Nefesh was? His Mesiras Nefesh was that he put every bit of his energy, he dedicated every moment of his life to raising 12 righteous children. Avram didn't have that. Avram had Yishmael. Yitzchak didn't have that. He had an Esav. Yaakov put every bit of his energy into raising 12 righteous children. And again, there were ups and downs. Yosef and the brothers, not so Pashut. Not a Pashut family structure. They had their struggles. But Yaakov was dedicated to that. At the end of the day, when he gives the brachos to his children, Rashi could say, he could look at the story and say, at the end of the day, Yaakov is blessed. Mitaso shlema. His bed is complete. The children that were born to him, every single one of them lived the life of righteousness. Again, not a simplistic life of righteousness. But at the end of the day, the Mesiras Nefesh of Yaakov, who says the Belzer Rebbe, was to create 12 righteous children. It takes an understanding that chinuch never ends. To be proactive in your chinuch. Sometimes you see a child that, you know, one of the children, one of our children is able to kind of find their way more easily than our other children. So you put more effort into the child who needs more. And again, maybe that's appropriate, but there can never be a child being raised by a Jewish parent passively. It doesn't exist. That's not a recipe for success. Even Yaakovinu himself, we just said, gave his whole life to raise 12 righteous children. Parshas Vayeshev. Before things sort of break down with Yosef and the brothers, it says Vayeshev Yaakov, and Rashi comments, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'shalva. Yaakov thought, finally, I educated my children, they're grown up now, Right, I got through the hard teenage years. Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'shalva. Now I can relax a little bit. Immediately what happens? Immediately things start to go crazy. So Moshe Feinstein says in the Darash Moshe, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'shalva. Yaakov wanted to just relax. What does that mean? He wanted to go on vacation? He wanted to go down to Florida and shoot some golf? What did he want to do? What was Yaakov looking to do? So Moshe Feinstein says he was looking for a break as a machanech. He says, I gave so much of my life to pave a path for my children. I gave them everything. I gave away years of my life to set them on the path. They're on that path. It's good. I can relax now. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's not how chinuch works. Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'shalva. Yaakov thought, maybe I can relax. I can stop being so hands-on. My children are a bit older now. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, a Jew can never stop educating. The second you pull back, Yaakov, look how the family falls apart. You can't assume that a child, just because they seem to be on a path towards greatness, towards success, that the child can continue to educate himself. Think about Yitzchak, a kid is Yitzchak. He's still called a nar. He's called a child. Because to every parent, no matter how old you are, right, you look at your children, you have to, it's an ongoing process. It's a process that we have to be proactive in, not passive. Chanoch l'nar pi darko, educate a child according to his ways. Gam ki azkin lo yasur mimena. The pashup shot is, if you teach a child to be a true version of himself or herself, then gam ki azkin, when the child gets older, lo yasur mimena. The child will maintain that path. But I think we could say, gam ki azkin, when you get older, right? When he, the educator, the parent gets older, lo yasur mimena. When you and the child both grow up, that doesn't mean the job is over. Again, it's a lifetime of hard work, of being proactive. Chinuch, what does the word mean? What does the word itself mean? What does it mean to be mechanech? So the Piazetz in the Rebbe, in his very beautiful sefer, the Chovas HaTalmidim, again, another great chinuch work, which is now available in English. It's very worthwhile. Again, maybe something we should study together. But the Piazetz in the Rebbe, in the very beginning of his sefer, says, what does the word chinuch mean? He brings proofs that chinuch means to start a process that's going to continue. That's what the word means. Chanukah sabayis. Person builds a new home. And you invite your friends and family, you have a Chanukah sabayis. What does that mean? It means I'm going to use the house one time and then that's it. Chanukah sabayis means this is the opening ceremony and I hope to continue to live in this house for many, many years of health and happiness. So chinuch is the same thing. To educate a child means that I put them on a path that they're going to continue to live with for many, many years. And the Pesach Rebbe says you can try to control your children. That's not chinuch. You can control them while they're in your home. A teacher can try to control a child and make demands of a child within a classroom, but you haven't educated them. If they don't choose it when they walk out of your home, if they don't choose it when they walk out of your class, then it's not really chinuch. Chinuch means beginning a process that's going to continue. And unfortunately, and I've seen this again over the years in many different ways, there are parents who wake up too late. There are parents who wake up too late in the game. I can tell you countless examples when I taught in high school. A parent-teacher's conference when a parent comes to with a tear in his or her eye, trying to seek advice, what to do. And I'm saying, you can't wake up at this point so late in the game and decide all of a sudden you want to educate your child, be involved, be actively involved in their life. Because they're looking back at the last 10, 12, 15 years and saying, where were you all those years? You're busy on your cell phone, you're busy checking your email, you're busy doing all these other things. Now all of a sudden you see that I'm having starting to stray a little bit, and all of a sudden you take an interest in me. It's a little bit too late. There was someone who once came to a Rav in Liverpool. Came to this rabbi and said, Rabbi, I have a major crisis. My daughter is thinking about marrying a non-Jewish man, and I need you to speak to her. And the Rav, with the sigh, said, you need me to speak to her? It's not going to work. Why wasn't it going to work? Because this fellow, whose daughter was now thinking about marrying a non-Jewish person, right, for years had belittled the Rav. For years. Every time the rabbi got up to speak in shul on Shabbos, those were the jokes of lunch. Whatever the rabbi said, that became the conversation. The rabbi is too extreme about this, he's too extreme about that. You spend years training your daughter to think that anything I say is irrelevant. So now you come crying to me, and you want me to try to go have a hashpa on her and convince her not to marry out of Judaism. It's not going to work. And he told the mashal from the Chafetz Chaim. He said one time there was a very famous doctor who was traveling on the road, and he had his bag with him with some very special and expensive and unique medicines. And he was accosted by some robbers on the road. And they stole his wallet, they took the bag out of his hand, and they opened it up, and they saw these little medicine jars. And they said, what is this? And he said, please, it's very important medicine. It's a unique type of medicine. It could heal people. And they said, what do we need this for? Right? And they threw it overboard. They threw it into the river. They threw it into the river never to be recovered. They stole his money. And that was it. This doctor traveled on. And he came to one of the towns. And as he came to one of the towns, he was approached by some of the people of the town, that there was a certain illness in the town, and that was the medicine that he needed. And when people saw that this doctor was in town, and he was supposed to be the world expert on this matter, they gathered and they said, "Please help us, you're the only one who can help us." And he says, "I don't have the medicine, I don't have anything anymore." And as he's looking out at the crowd of those individuals who are coming, seeking this medication, he realizes that one of the robbers, one of the people who had beat him up on the road and stolen his money, was one of the people in that crowd. And he came to him and he said, "Please, I need you to help my child." He said, "You threw the medicine overboard. You destroyed everything. You want me now to come and save the day? You did this to yourself." Sometimes you find that parents wake up late in the game and they're looking for a Yeshua, a salvation. How can I save things? And of course, a parent can never give up. But if a parent doesn't understand that there's no shalva, adam la amal yulad, it's something that we have to do with Mesiras Nefesh, the same way Yaakov gave his life to his children. It's hard. It's hard. It's a hard avoda to do it day in and day out. But the more a person works at it, the more a person thinks about it and talks about it and asks, "What can I do to be a better parent? How can I be a better parent, a better friend to my child, a better teacher to my child?" Right? The more we work on it, the more we don't cripple ourselves along the way, the less we'll have to worry, God forbid, down the line when we realize that there's a problem, we'll be involved. We'll be in already. There'll be a conversation that can be had between a parent and a child, which, God forbid, could be lost if the parent was not proactive for all those years. I want to speak out one final point, and I think it's maybe the main thing that I've seen, the mistake that parents sometimes make when it comes to educating their children. And that is that parents don't practice what they preach. It's very easy for a parent to talk a language of, "I want my child to do this, I would like my child to do that." And the parents, right, themselves, they don't do it. Think about Kabbalah Sattar. What happened at Har Sinai? At Har Sinai, one of the wondrous things that happened in the heavens was that everyone was able to see the sounds. It was a miracle. You could see sound. Normally we hear sound. You could see sound. And you could hear sight at Har Sinai. It was one of the wonderful, unbelievable miracles that took place. Kol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos. People could see the sounds. But I once heard from Rav Moshe Weinberger Shlita, and it could be it's an idea that's found in Sfarim. Kol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos means that your children need to see the sounds. Your children need to see you doing the things that you're saying to them. And therefore, if you're telling your child, "I wish you would learn more, I wish you would daven more, I wish you would do chesed, I wish you would do X, Y, or Z," and you yourself don't do that, children are very quick to pick up on that. And it's true at all ages. I taught in elementary school, I taught in high school, I teach college-age students now, and at all ages, kids recognize right away that if you're not living it, if you're not the living embodiment of that, so why should I be? Think about Pirkei Avos. In Pirkei Avos, the statements over and over introduced, "Hu haya omer." What does it mean, "Hu haya omer"? The Babbage Rebbe and many others explained, "Hu haya omer." He was it, he lived it, and therefore omer, he had the right to talk about it. So when Shammai comes along, Pirkei Avos says, "Greet people with a smiling face." Shammai never said that until he learned to live that way. Shammai was a person who we normally think of as being a little more stern. Hillel was the one who was more gentle. But when Shammai finally worked on himself to learn to greet people with a smiling face, only then could he say, "Having a Kabbalist call out them to save upon him Yafas." To live it. Hu haya, he was it, and therefore omer, he could say. And time and again, you see that children become what their parents are. Not what their parents say. Children become what their parents are. What do you really value? Right? What are the things that you really... I know you're telling me you value, but what do you really value? If you want to evaluate a person... So there's a beautiful pasuk in Mishlei, in the 27th parak. Pasuk says, "Matzrif l'kesef akor l'zahav." The way to find out what silver really is, you have to refine it. Gold, the same process. V'ish l'fi mahalo. You want to find out what a person is? The simple explanation, ish, a person, is l'fi mahalo. What do people say about him? Does he have a great reputation? Does she have a great reputation? Do people have nice things to say about that person? That's one way to read the pasuk. Rabbeinu Yonah has a very famous interpretation of this pasuk. He says, "Ish l'fi mahalo is not what people say about you. Ish l'fi mahalo is what do you praise? What do you really value?" So if you're talking that, if you're constantly telling your child, that I expect X, Y, or Z, or if you're praising things that are not of real substance, so your child's going to become that. If you tell your child to go learn, right, or go to shul, while you're, watching a TV show, so what kind of message does that send? What does that say to a child? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, what does it mean, ish lefi mahalo peirusho? Malos ha'adam lefi masha yihalel. What do you praise? What do you really value? You're going to come and you're going to make fun of the rabbi, and then you're going to ask the rabbi to come and inspire your child? That's not going to work. Chafetz Chaim says it's not going to work. That Rav in Liverpool says it's not going to work. If you're Meshabech HaMaisim HaTovim, if you praise things of real substance, Chachamim Tzadikim, people who live a righteous life, so then that becomes who you are. Right? But a person who's Meshabech Maisim Magunim or Mahal HaRashaim, so Rahman al-Fun, that says a lot about who you are. The way that a person talks, but it has to be also how you practice. It's not just how you talk. I read a great line one time, someone wrote on a website, said he took his child to shul, 4-year-old child, on a Sunday morning, took his son along to shul, and his son was, he put on his tefillin, and his son was taking like the long end of the shalrosh strap and wrapping it around his arm. And this guy thought to himself, he said, wow, it's so cute, it's so beautiful to watch my child pretending to daven just like me. And then he said, pretending to daven just like me. Right? Are our children pretending they want to be davening the way that we're davening? Or just like we're pretending, they're also pretending? Right? It was a very deep insight. Children are perceptive in these things. They understand if you're for real, if it's a Torah Schaim, if you're living it, if the Torah is real by you, it'll be real by them. It's as simple as that. People think, what can I do to get my child to become, I think it was the title tonight, how do I create an inspired child? An inspired child is created by an inspired parent. A parent who comes out to a shir is going to have a child who's going to want to go to a shir. And a parent who's always too busy to make time for Torah, for davening, or for chassid, or for mitzvos, is going to have a child who also has all of the same excuses. They learn it. They learn it in a very natural way from their parents. In Parshas Emor, the parsha begins. Yomar Hashem Moshe, Emor al Kohanim, right? Bnei Aaron ve'amarta aleihem. Emor ve'amarta. Rashi picks up on the double lashon. Say and say. Emor ve'amarta. Say to Aaron to say. What does that mean? So Rashi says, Lahazir gedolim al ketanim. What does it mean? It means that the gedolim are being told to inform the ketanim, right? That the kohanim who are older have to take responsibility for the kohanim who are younger. But I saw once in the Sefer Beis Aaron, it's a funny expression, lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. Lahazir gedolim ala ketanim, it's a funny lashon. So the Beis Aaron explained, you know what it means, lahazir gedolim ala ketanim? It's not tell the gedolim to tell the ketanim what to do, but lahazir gedolim, tell the adults, warn them, lahazir gedolim, warn the gedolim that the way that they're going to act is going to be ala ketanim. That's how the children are going to act. And in the Sefer Beis Aaron, he tells a little story. He says, one time someone came to the Kotzker Rebbe and said to the Kotzker Rebbe that I want a bracha that my child should be a Talmud Chacham. Yeah, he submitted a little kvittel. You go to Chassidus Rebbe, you give a kvittel with your name on it, some things that you desire. And he says, Rebbe, I need a bracha that my son should be a Talmud Chacham. So the Kotzker Rebbe said, you want your child to be a Talmud Chacham? So then you know what the best thing to do is? You have to sit down and go learn. And if you learn, your child will learn. And if you think the way to become a Talmud Chacham is you go to some rabbi and say, Rabbi, give me a bracha, my child should be a Talmud Chacham. So you know what your child's going to do? He's going to go to his rabbi, and he's going to get a bracha that he should be a Talmud Chacham. And we'll create this endless cycle of people talking about being Talmud Chachamim, people talking about being good Jews, and no one's actually going to become a good Jew. Right? Lahazir gedolim al ketanim. Realize that the way that the gedolim act is the way that the ketanim are going to act. Children get this in a very, very real way. Hu haya omer, if you live it, if it's a Torah Chaim for you, it'll be a Torah Chaim for your children. I'll end with just one final story. The Mashgiach of Shlomo Volpi, we mentioned earlier, again, a great chinuch giant, worked with some very fine students. But one time he came to his Rebbe, Rechazko Levenstein, the great Mashgiach from Mir. He came to his Rebbe, he said, Rebbe, I have a child, one of my students, he's struggling with Amunah issues. All right, so he sat with Rav Chatzkel, they spoke for a while, different bits of advice, and as Rav Volpi got up to leave, Rav Chatzkel called him and said, Rav Shlomo, let me ask you something. He said, do you believe in God? So Rav Volpi was already a distinguished person in his own right. So he said, Rebbe, I think so, yeah. I think I believe in Hashem. And he turned to Rav Chatzkel, okay, he started to walk out. Rav Chatzkel called him back again, he said, Rav Shlomo, tell me, do you really believe in Hashem? So he says, I think so. So he says, so if you really believe in Hashem, so go tell your student who's struggling with the Muna, with his belief in Hashem, go tell him that you believe in Hashem. And Rav Volpi walked out, he said, what does that mean? He walked out of the room, he said, what does that mean? Because I believe in Hashem, so if I just tell it to my student, he'll believe in Hashem. But Rav Volpi said years later, he said, Rav Chatzkel is right. If a person understands that whatever's going to be true by you, if you live it, it's so much easier to give it over to someone else. It's so much more natural to give it over to someone else. To the degree that you believe in Hashem, your children will believe in Hashem. To the degree that you're excited about Torah and mitzvos, your children will be excited about Torah and mitzvos. That's what it means when we call it a Torah Sechaim. If it's alive by you, it'll be alive by them. So again, we should all be zocha, the best of our ability, to take a few of these ideas. It's only a few thoughts. There's a lot to think about. If we want to continue this this topic, this discussion, I think it's a good thing. There's definitely some very good chinuch svarim that we could learn inside together if that's something that interests us. But Hashem should give us the strength. Adam la'amul yulad, it's a lot of work. It's a daunting task. But Mirtz Hashem, with the Kodesh Baruch Hu's help, we'll all be zochet to nurture our children. Again, lefi darko, in accordance with their ways, to achieve that greatness. Again, greatness means a lot of different things, but each child should be able to be great, and Mirtz Hashem will be a nachas ruach, not only for ourselves, but for Kodesh Baruch Hu, who has entrusted us with this very special task. Thank you so much. Have a great night.